This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Hello there, and welcome to our seventh episode of Retail Recovery. My name is Caroline Greenwell. I sit within the Litigation and Dispute Resolution Division of Charles Russell Speechlease. I also head up the firm's Consumer Brands campaign. Today, I'll be co-hosting with Freddie Law, who you've also heard from before. Freddie is a commercial lawyer, and he heads up the firm's food and beverage campaign. So we share a lot of interests and experiences in the retail space. This week, we're going international and are very pleased to be joined by our colleagues Mark Hill and Simon Green from our Dubai office. Over to you guys to introduce yourselves, and we'll then get cracking.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mark Hill. I'm based in the Middle East and in the CRS Dubai office. My responsibility is pretty much to head up the commercial practice of the firm, and with particular focus, I guess, across the TMT, IP, retail, brands, F&B space. I've been in the Middle East for, well, over 20 years living, over 25 working.
And hello, my name is Simon Green. I am a partner of Charles Russell Speechlease. I have a number of different hats, actually, within the firm. My day job is the head of real estate across the Middle East. We operate from three offices in the region, Bahrain, Qatar and Dubai. But we work on matters across the wider GCC and beyond. It's a very broad practice that we have, that we regularly advise on matters relating to both the retail sector as well as the F&B sector, the latter usually in conjunction with our significant hotels and hospitality focus. Typically, this means advising on leases, licenses, concession agreements, and franchise agreements. Similarly to Mark, I've also been in the region quite a long time. I first arrived in Bahrain back in 2008.
Fantastic. So perfect set of experience for the discussion we're about to have today. So the plan is to hear Mark and Simon's perspectives on how COVID-19 has impacted the Middle East as a retail and hospitality hub. We're going to be looking at how the pandemic has been managed in the Middle East, the impact it's had on both the retail and hospitality operators in the region, but also organisations who may be thinking of investing or establishing in the region. We're going to do this through the lens of a number of topics, from employment law issues to real estate considerations, digital transformation, management of disputes, and general government protocols in the region. So for those of you who've listened previously, you'll know that we've touched on a number of these issues, but very much from a UK-centric perspective. So we thought it was time to kind of lift our heads up and hear about experiences in the sector more internationally. So without further ado, let's start by talking first about the governmental assistance and support that's being provided to organisations in the Middle East and how that's manifested itself in the retail and hospitality sector. I wonder if, Mark, you might be able to comment on that.
Sure. There's quite a lot going on in the region, I guess would be the easy way of summarising it. Probably one of the primary takeaways that I would mention in the area of looking at what there is it's very specific to the operating parameters of any particular retailer. So there could well be something that would be relevant to you in one form or another, whether you're already operating here or perhaps looking to operate here. The assistance primarily that's come from government, I guess, is targeted at a number of areas. One of them is in relation to relieving business costs. So we've seen quite a lot of provisions relating to redemption or reduction of government fees and other related areas. Secondly, you've got quite a lot of reforms targeting employee regulation, attempting to make things better within the COVID-19 era. I know we're going to come on to talk about that specifically a little later anyway. And then in addition, from a UAE perspective, there is government support being offered through particularly the banks in the region. Now, just before I start talking about all of that in a little bit more detail, I think one thing is just to bear in mind the nature of the region here. We talk about the Middle East, which is right and proper, but the Middle East covers a whole range of jurisdictions, different governments, and different operating regulations across the region. So again, as I mentioned earlier on, one of the key things I would always say to anybody either operating in or interested in operating in the region or changing their basis of operation in the region, do bear in mind that there may be something of relevance to you depending upon the support that is available. I can talk from UAE perspective initially, but you will see similar things across multiple jurisdictions.
Yeah, understood. And did you want to touch on this sort of particular UAE initiative that you mentioned, Mark? Might that be of interest?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, as I say, there are similar things appearing across region, but to give an example, an illustration, I guess, from a UAE perspective, and then we can talk about other regulations in other regions as required. But so those three kind of areas are fairly common. Now, to pick on the UAE, again, the UAE is a good illustration of the complexity of the region. We have a number of different laws and regulations that interact within the UAE. We have federal law, which covers the entire country, but then we also have various regulations that are coming out on an emirate by emirate basis. So, again, think of different laws and regulations applying on a statewide basis. It just means that we have regard to more than one thing when we look at support or regulations within region. Another thing to bear in mind is that anybody who's operated in the Middle East and in the Gulf particularly will know that we have an awful lot of free zones. So we do have a difference depending on how you are set up and how you are operating between onshore and offshore. With all of the kind of regulations that we are seeing, as I say, they broadly fall into those three categories. So you may, for example, be looking at suspension of real estate registration fees. You may be looking at certain banks offering deferment of loan installments. Abu Dhabi Investment Bank, for example, has done that in Abu Dhabi. You may have cancellation of certain fees that would be applied ordinarily by the government for a period of time. We've got a whole range of these that apply on different periods, some through to the end of the year, some for 3-month periods. Dubai has put in a 10% reduction in water and electricity bills for a 3-month period. We have customs fees either being reduced or removed, 20% in Dubai, for example. So we'll come on and talk about employee regulation changes later on, because the various governments have been announcing various things in terms of trying to improve the scenario for employers who are under stress and giving clarity to employees who are operating within region. I'll talk about the UAE position again.
By all means, segue into employee matters, because it's definitely something that our listeners are hugely interested in, and it's obviously been a really hot topic and an area where government intervention has been crucially important. So yeah, by all means, please do educate us on the sort of the initiatives and the support that's been there to assist organisations throughout this period.
I mean, again, governments across the region have been thinking about the area. The UAE has come out with a reasonably organised range of regulations to try and assist in the position. So most people are talking to us from the F&B retail sector, for example, but this is equally applicable to anywhere where the close down or social distancing implications are highly impactful. So that includes live entertainment, events, production, even supply chain. A lot of the same questions are being asked. So how does remote working work? What do we do in relation to the pressure on a business that has no revenue coming in? So regulations have been issued through the UAE to try to address some of these things. So we have a ministerial decision to all of the kind of issues that an employer or an employee might be interested in. So remote working is permitted. Even there is a track towards employers acting properly to be able to instigate periods of paid or unpaid leave, permanent or temporary salary reductions. So these are all careful or interesting areas. Many of the pressure groups are talking about support in the area of employee retention, because on the basis that we have a terrible storm to weather, but one day doors are going to be opening again. I know they are at the moment, but even on a more normalised basis moving forward. And in order to do that, having the ability to retain employees is key. So that's what part of these regulations are partly about. So the first step is certain things are permitted without having to get consent. So, for example, having people working on a remote working basis. But then there are a category of things which are driven by coming to an agreement with the employee. So this includes things such as unpaid leave, salary reductions, whether permanent or temporary. Now, you then would ask, as many people that we're talking to in the retail and F&B sector do query, what happens if you can't reach an agreement? So it's still early days for us to be able to answer that completely, but the indication from the regulations is that provided the employer is acting properly and having been able to show that they are impacted, not difficult in F&B and retail, because we've had whole scale closures across the region, as many countries around the world have. But secondly, that they have followed the process of the regulations that have been issued in relation to employees and employers operating together during the COVID era. And then if an agreement can't be reached, then it would be possible to move to possible termination arrangements, exiting the employees. Now, in the Middle East, a very common thing that would happen then is that you would get an automatic unfair dismissal claim. However, provided, as I say, employers have been following due process and acting appropriately, the thinking as per the regulations is that that will be taken in mind, and therefore those kind of claims specifically about COVID era difficulties and terminations would be taken into account, and therefore we are believing that those kind of unfair dismissal claims won't necessarily be taken up by the court.
Yeah, understood.
Got a lot of information there, but the gist of it is communication between employer and employee following due process, and there have been positive regulations put out there to try and make everybody's life clearer, and at least it gives the employer an ability to look at two things. One, downsizing if they really have to, but secondly, a key point for many people, how actually to try to retain employees during this difficult time, knowing that we will head back towards some kind of a normalised position eventually.
Absolutely. And there's sort of a reputational element as well, isn't there, for organisations, and looking to the long term, they don't want to be seen as the organisation that enforced salary reductions and redundancies by looking only at the very short term. So lots to consider, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is. And I'm speaking to some of our retail and F&B, but retail particularly have been very concerned about that. So we act in this region for some of the larger retailing organizations and trading families across the region. And when I talk to general counsels in-house there, the phrase you just used is one of the things that they say is actually at the top of their current agenda in terms of them being involved wholesale or very heavily in reputation management issues. So there is a lot of thought going in, but as I say, again, we do at least have a raft of, unfortunately, different, but as I say, the Middle East is a large region and there's quite a lot of difference from country to country and even emirate to emirate, but we do have a lot of government organizations at least trying to think about how life can move into the future with support of the SME and larger trading organisations within region.
Thanks, Mark. I think that's interesting, and clearly there's a lot going on in the employee-employer sort of relationship and assistance from the government. But Simon, I'd like to turn to you, if I may, to turn to real estate matters, which we had a podcast on earlier in the series, which some of our listeners may have listened to. And the main theme from that podcast in terms of what's going on in the real estate world was the importance of collaboration with landlords. Tenants should be getting in touch with their landlords to seeing what can be done in the current climate. Be interested for your views on that and whether that's also the case in the Middle East and where exactly do the tenants currently stand with their existing leases.
Thanks, Freddie. That's quite a lot of questions there. So in order to answer this, I think it's probably best if I just break things down into perhaps a number of constituent parts. So namely, where do tenants stand? Perhaps then also a brief understanding of force majeure in the region, which I'll refer to as FM, and then perhaps legislative changes, stimulus measures that may help before then getting on to the practical kind of options and solutions. So just in terms of kind of where tenants currently stand, I think governments around the GCC have responded to COVID-19 and the challenges it's created around retail, F&B, hospitality in different ways, obviously. These have ranged from full lockdowns, full-blown lockdowns, to effectively partial shutdowns of those sectors. So where businesses have been operating in a reduced capacity, but they have been subject to certain restrictions such as social distancing, mandatory wearing of masks, etc. And I know Mark will be touching upon those types of issues and what the sectors will be doing and having to be doing going forward later. It's crucial that businesses operating in these sectors are aware of their contractual obligations. So obviously one of the key areas in which everyone is going to be concerned about is the payment of rent or the relevant fees. But there are other obligations which need to be considered, and guidance will probably be required. So for example, some of those other obligations will be things like repair and maintenance. Is a tenant prevented from carrying out this obligation because the property is closed or access can't be provided? Keep open. Well, keep open provisions are very prevalent in retail leases. They contain obligations on tenants to open their shops for a specified number of hours. This clearly won't be possible if there's a full or partial lockdown situation. And then finally, quiet enjoyment. So from a landlord's perspective, it may be in breach of its obligation to provide the property to a tenant free from disturbance if there is a full or partial lockdown situation. So the bottom line, I think, is that an awareness of express terms in the underlying contract is going to be key in helping to formulate a strategy as to how best to deal with and, I think, adapt to the challenges being faced. Turning to the next kind of key constituent part, which is force majeure, I think it's essential to understand what we mean by force majeure. And broadly speaking, it's an event that's outside of the control of one or both of the contracting parties that renders the performance of their contractual obligations either impossible or impracticable. Now, express force majeure provisions are relatively unusual in a lease within the region. But if it is included, then we would tend to find that the suspension of payment obligations will normally be carved out from such a force majeure FM clause. So not dissimilar really to the position under English law. The FM provision will need to be considered on a case-by-case basis to determine whether it's wide enough or specific enough to cover the current pandemic. And, what's the process for invoking FM? That will need to be considered. Do the parties need to agree to it? Do the FM provisions suffer from being time-bound? Is there a specific notification process that needs to be followed, et cetera, et cetera? So if we just turn our attention to kind of what I would classify as the normal position in the region, which is where leases don't have express FM provisions, what then is the position? Well, there is statutory force majeure provisions. So the concept of FM does exist across the region and is enshrined within relevant civil codes. The only issue with that really is that there's no clear definition of FM, so it will be subject to determination of the courts on a case-by-case basis. And this means that each jurisdiction within the region, which Mark has rightly said, do have different laws and different regulations, may treat force majeure slightly differently. What's really important, though, and really want to highlight for the purpose of what we're speaking about today, is that the key difference between civil law jurisdictions and common law jurisdictions is the fact that statutory force majeure provisions in the region can apply to all of the contractual obligations. So this can include the payment of rent obligation. I don't want to go into too much detail in terms of legislation within the region relating to FM, as we have actually produced quite a number of these articles over the last month or so. But you can see that even if a contract is silent in relation to force majeure, there is still the opportunity to consider force majeure from a statutory perspective, and its application is potentially wider in this region than it is under English law. And then finally, in terms of legislative changes, stimulus measures which might help, each jurisdiction has enacted different pieces of legislation to try and help tenants within the relevant sectors that we're talking about today. But the one I can probably think of best and easiest comes to mind is the moratorium from eviction for non-payment or breach of covenant. So, for example, Dubai and Abu Dhabi have declared that a two-month moratorium will apply from April 2020, whereby a court will not be able to issue an eviction order. and we're waiting to see if that's going to be extended beyond June. Again, each jurisdiction has put in place a raft of different stimulus packages as well and different measures. But again, the most applicable to the sectors in terms of what I think having a direct benefit on tenants is probably the previous announcements that both certain government-owned developers, such as EMAR, for example, as well as others across the region, and a number of free zones within Dubai, Emirate of Dubai, such as the DIFC, are offering relief from rental payments to tenants within those zones, and they can be for up to 6 months. So, you know, there are a number of other measures arising from other stimulus packages across the GCC, which will have an indirect benefit across the sectors, such as reduced municipality fees, support with utility charges, and postponing of payment of VAT. But I think the most direct one is as I've mentioned, the rental relief payments across the free zones and the government-owned developers. So just wrapping up in terms of this section, I think it's fair to say that existing measures probably don't go far enough for businesses. But I think, you know, the fallout from COVID-19, and as Mark will indicate, the challenges that we are facing will probably continue for quite some time to come.
And I think that's all right, Simon. I mean, the only thing I'd add quickly there is that, I mean, for sure, industry is asking for more. So petitions have been getting quite a lot of press recently. We have had some involvement in a couple of them as well. But from F&B, from malls, from retail groups, from the International Live Events Association, for example, putting petitions in, asking for additional support over and above. And I guess they're reaching towards some of the same kind of things that have already been outlined in various of the authorities and governments' regulations across region, but directed towards employee retention, business continuity funding and or loans, reduction of business expenses. So that, as I say, that there's quite a lot of support already being given across region by various governments. But I think this is such an unprecedented time that every industry sector is looking very specifically at the things that would assist them. So anybody listening to this who isn't quite sure about what may apply, that is a key area for them to consider, I would say. It may make the difference.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what would you be recommending tenants and landlords be doing right now in practical terms then?
Okay, so I think seeking to utilise force majeure requires ultimately a court determination. So this is going to be a last resort in many circumstances, many instances. So relying upon the moratorium is also risky, as it means breaching a contract, and the moratorium is only temporary in nature. So much better, in our view, would be trying to agree what I would classify as a mutually beneficial outcome. And this is certainly something we have done for a number of our clients over the last few months. So what does that mean, and what does it involve? Well, it usually involves some sort of rent relief. And this is in consideration of a number of things. So, for example, an extension to the term of the lease or contract, an agreement to take additional property or to surrender part of property back to the landlord where the landlord wishes to utilise that space for other purposes. Perhaps a removal of a key concession in favour of a tenant, such as a break clause or a limited repair obligation, or agreeing to a fixed increase in rent, whether through a rent review or otherwise, beyond the time reasonably anticipated as being disrupted by COVID-19. So, you know, for me, and a final point for me, is that it's going to be important to note that a rent suspension is not the same as a rent reduction. So our listeners shouldn't get confused in that regard. A rent suspension only defers that obligation to pay rent for a period of time, the agreed period. So if we are trying to advise our clients and trying to, if you like, provide a mutually beneficial outcome, if our clients are giving away some of the important points I've just mentioned, so in terms of extending the term of the lease or agreeing to a fixed increase in the rent over a period of time, it would be much, much better to agree a rent reduction rather than just a rent suspension.
We've touched on there, I think, issues that aren't just isolated to the Middle East and global issues in particular, looking to see what measures apply to you and and with the social distancing and compliance with government guidelines that are going to be coming out, especially when businesses try to get back to work, and the impact that may have. I know in the UK there's a lot of commentary about how operators in this sector are going to be able to continue to be profitable if they're having to run at less than 100% capacity, and what might be happening in terms of consumer preferences changing. Mark, I'm wondering, what would you be advising operators that want to return to work and look to reopening premises? Is there anything they should be doing right now and thinking towards the future?
I mean, quite a lot. Again, it's I guess a return to operation is quite a complex thing. Safety obviously is paramount in terms of the regulations that are being initiated, but obviously it is safety in an ever-changing risk context. Having a full understanding of what the requirements are. Well, I've been speaking to quite a lot of retailers and F&B operators and franchising operations. And the key for them is the one you've exactly just mentioned there, Freddie, which is how do they possibly run with the seating capacity restrictions? And also the other primary thing, the secondary item that is there in pretty much all regulations, which is the 2 meter social distancing aspect. So many of them are working along the same kind of fields, F&B particularly, running it in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, just to give two examples, at 30%. But then when you add on top of that the practicalities of what 2 meter tabling means in terms of your facility structure, all of these things are very, although they're regulation driven, they're very practical. So what kind of margin are you actually going to be running on as an F&B operator? How does that impact on the targets that you have under your franchise agreements if you're a franchisee within region? So these are all very practical and commercially driven things that are all coming out of the regulations that exist. So being very clear about the business impact from aligning with and working within the regulations is key. It's across all region, again, this face-to-face aspect. So returning to production, recommencing live events on reduced occupancy, but maintaining social distancing, entry into and exit from safety requirements when customers are within premises. All of these things have a very bottom line driven aspect to them. Some of the retailers that I've been speaking to as well, we're working on different percentages across region for retailers. Some are currently up to 70%, for example, retail and wholesale as of 27 May in the UAE. But again, with restrictions in terms of age limitation, entry and exit and so on. But the interesting point is that profitability hit. So how do you have to rework your numbers in a way which is going to allow you to have business continuity if you're working on those two primary factors? Number one, the reduced capacity, and number two, that practical 2 meter limitation that many businesses are facing.
And I guess one way around the sort of social distancing 2 meter guidelines is, of course, to try and sell more online and to boost your online and digital presence where you haven't got the same sort of hurdles to deal with, I guess. And we've seen traditional bricks and mortar stores trying to get online, and even businesses with small online presence try to make it a lot bigger. What do you think they should be considering? Is there something they need legally that they should be thinking about, being careful about, if they're starting to move a lot of their business online, or UK businesses looking to sell in the Middle East online?
I mean, all very good questions. I mean, let me put it into a couple of different categories. So number one of the great things actually about the Middle East is the degree to which that digital orientated retail transformation process has already begun quite some time ago within region. So at an e-commerce capability level, operating within jurisdictions around the Middle East, you already have a bit of an advantage, because we're already some way down. Businesses have already been looking at this as part of their new retail continuity. And this has been going on for several years within the Middle East already. Secondly, though, linked to that, you've also got government support. So you do have governments like Bahrain, like the UAE, like the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia that also are attempting to stimulate digital economy growth. So there's quite a lot of, again, support focus direction going towards the whole area of retail transformation in a digital context. Now, I said two, I'm going to actually give you a third one. So the key thing for people to think about, you knowing that you have that enormous opportunity, then it's really just being careful about the nature of your operations during this transformational period. So it may, some of what I tend to talk about to people who are transforming in an online context does sound very boring, but it is very important. How you contract online, making sure you are, I'm a process person, so you've got to have your process clear in terms of how you are doing any kind of online contracting. There are other things, again, Simon and I have both talked about the very large area that we exist in within the Middle East and the many different regimes, regulations and laws that exist across the region. So we do have to take consideration of a few really interesting areas, not only on how you contract, because that means that you've got to have your trading terms online robustly drawn, but also in light of what is permitted in the law to operate online. Secondly, privacy. You've got to make sure that your data protection processes are up to speed. You've got to make sure that you are getting appropriate consents to use, to collation of data. It is inevitable that you will fall within personal data as it comes online across region in law after law after law. So again, giving regards to that. And then thirdly, an area that a lot of people practically forget about, consumer rights. So if you're operating online, it doesn't change the fact that both the consumer protection laws and the e-commerce laws that we have within region talk very specifically. All countries, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Egypt, they all have provisions dealing with returns policy, cancellation of contracts. Now, obviously, this stuff is, again, very practically driven if you are in an online context. One of the difficulties I think that we're seeing within the industry, within the region, is that people are trying to upscale very quickly. So their online processes are not quite coping with the new world operations that they're trying to roll out. So therefore, many brands have had criticism in terms of not getting the ordering and returns and cancellation side of things working smoothly. And probably again, as you mentioned earlier on, Caroline, one of the key things, different aspect, but again, is that brand reputation control and management. So while the opportunity is there, it's incumbent upon anybody trying to play in this space or increase their operation in this space not to get it wrong, because then you have a reputational issue that you may not recover from.
Yeah, really interesting. It's a topic close to my heart, the kind of brand protection, reputational elements. It's a very nice segue onto what I wanted to move on to next, which is, you know, not wanting to bring the progressive digital transformation move down, but there will be instances inevitably in these, you know, sort of financially tight times where organizations find themselves in a dispute situation. As again, we discussed in a previous podcast the importance of commerciality and having that and relationships at front of mind when companies find themselves in those tight spots. So you might have all the legal arguments in the world that you could run, but generally, our advice has been to focus on what really matters, you know, working with suppliers and counterparts to find a solution that allows that relationship to survive. And also, as you say, Mark, allows you to be held in high esteem still in from a public perspective. So are you seeing those kind of similar scenarios play out in the region?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But I mean, all super interesting stuff. But again, all very practical and very commercially driven. So We have one of the, you know, largest dispute resolution teams operating within the region. So we see all sides of it. But the practicalities of what are ongoing now absolutely require some key things, in my view. Communication. So if issues are coming up in the current time, and whether it's relating to your supply chain or your franchise arrangements, communication and discussion and getting into that as soon as you can to start to define some kind of a forward solutions orientated path is super important. And even more so in the Middle East. I'm sure, you know, you would say that in many jurisdictions, but we have a very relationship driven, culturally specific set of jurisdictions across the Middle East. So that communication modality is super important. And then looking at practicalities about what different positional stances might be in a particular situation. And it is only once you've been through that, you know, what are the concern areas for the various parties who are back discussing things, then parties that want to play together on a long-term basis will, often with our help, but will be able to negotiate positive outcomes that can take them forward, not only through difficult period, but on into the future. Because one of the things to bear in mind, I guess, is that whatever kind of normality that becomes the norm, we are going to want to have ongoing relationships and continuity. So it is incumbent, I think, to make sure that you're using every opportunity that there exists. You know, there's other things I haven't mentioned, systems from government. You know, many governments are attempting to give support through loan arrangements, primarily through supporting the banking institutions, so that they will provide facility, allow customers to apply for deferments, all those kind of things. So instead of going into a big falling out with your bank, be aware of the regulations that the banks are subject to, and use that in a leveraged conversation to look for solutions, rather than just having somebody refusing to realign your facility. So it's not just in terms of your trading arrangements, it cuts across everything. I was speaking to an operator yesterday who's having difficulties in attempting to renegotiate the facilities that they have. They have a rolling contract income based lending facility, which the bank currently is being slow to renegotiate. And their initial starting point was to say, you know, we want you to pay off the existing facility before we will look at topping up. That's just not practical, but it also may not be in line with whatever the government in question is trying to promote in terms of, for example, postponing payments of interest and principal loans for businesses affected, all those kind of things. So everybody who is getting into a dispute, they must be very aware of what is open to them, what the leverage position is, and then communication becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly not the time to be shy about suggesting sort of more practical solutions and ways forward, is it?
Sure, for sure.
Okay, amazing. Thank you. That's really interesting. So just to sort of wrap up, we've been asking our experts to leave our listeners with a key takeaway or top tip. So could I ask you both to offer up your key takeaway for organisations in the sector, either those that are operating in the Middle East or those thinking about MBT guys?
Okay. So from, you know, my perspective, from a real estate perspective, a couple of key things. You know, we are no longer in an environment in the Middle East where either contracts shouldn't be sufficiently comprehensive to cover off key risks. So the days of contracting on the back of a cigarette packet are over. And also, you know, don't agree a contract as initially drawn. You know, particularly from a tenant's perspective, they have a lot more bargaining power these days than they have ever had, particularly given the challenges around the sector. So they should be taking expert guidance and advice, and they are able to amend and change those contracts to suit their requirements.
Fantastic.
I think that's an excellent takeaway. I think the contractual side of things too often in the Middle East is seen as a commercial area that people wish to avoid. That has changed massively. Simon is absolutely right. So number one, having the right contractual provisions in place, including on a potentially renegotiated context within COVID-19 impact, is absolutely possible. So number one, contracts, the contractual position, wherever you are, can help in that communications dynamic that I mentioned earlier. Second takeaway I would have is be very aware of the regulations and how they apply to you. That includes in terms of restrictions, relaxation, and I would also say in terms of what government support is available, because I genuinely think that for many of the operators that I work with across region, we are working within a heavily SME-based industry context. It's very similar, as I say, across production, across events, across live entertainment, across in-dining, across F&B, across retail. Those things that are actually available on a country-by-country and jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis could well have a key commercial impact on many, many people. And I still am somewhat shocked as to how very often people aren't aware of the things that are available already that could help them.
Thanks. Yeah, some useful top tips there for our listeners to take away, definitely. And that leaves us at the end of our podcast. So I'd like to thank our speakers and our listeners and encourage anyone with any questions to get in touch at retailrecovery@crsblaw.com.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.